This is Health First with Dave Fuller, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
To Health First, and we are talking with Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell, PhD, psychologist, teacher, and writer. She's ventured into, pioneered, I think, a work in the Department of Suicide. And welcome back, Adele.
Thank you, Gary.
So the question was the notes. Does everybody leave a note? And maybe you can comment on that department.
Certainly. Actually, the majority of people who take their lives do not leave a note. The guesstimates are about, you read from 20 to 25% or 25 to 30%. And when I interviewed people who were suicidal and asked if they had left a note, they often allowed they didn't leave a note because they felt very guilty, or they were preoccupied preparing for their end, or they didn't feel like anybody would care, or they didn't feel it was necessary, or they were just too tired, and they wanted their family to forget them as soon as possible. But you also had people who, and they all used these exact same words, and every one of them said, oh my gosh, the note they left was gibberish. And those notes are reflected of someone who, as their mental state has become very chaotic, and that's often seen with people with very severe mental illness. They're leaving a note that makes absolutely no sense to anybody in the family. You'll often find, though, in my book, I tell the story of Sally, and she turned the house upside down for a year because she couldn't find a note and couldn't find a note. She was so mad at her husband for taking his life. Her father had taken his life, and now her husband had taken his. He'd had a very severe illness. And he had talked to her about it. She said, I don't want you to do it. I don't want you to go. And so a year to the day, she's about to do some gardening outside, and she sees a police car pull up. And this officer comes up and says, hi, I don't know if you remember me. She said, of course I do. Your name is Chris. He said, yeah. He said, I have to tell you, I had this strong feeling that I had to find this and bring this to you today. It was the one-year anniversary, and he handed, and I didn't know until this time that the police taped the original note. I didn't know that. And the police had taken the note and had it on file. She never knew it existed. And she said, I have to tell you, Adele, if I had gotten that note right away, I would have torn it into a million little pieces because I was so angry that he was gone. But I got this note, and he told me he loved me. He had special messages for the kids. And she said, I hold on to it, and I cherish it. And it has been a wonderful thing. So I had one man who was very suicidal, and I said, I want you to consider what you're going to say to your children. And he said to me, well, Adele, you'll explain it to them. I said, I can talk to them, but they want to hear from you. So you need to figure out what you're going to say. And the next time that I saw him, he said, I couldn't write the note. I don't think I'm ready to go. And I said, good.
Very interesting. Adele, I have a confession. About 10 years ago, I fell very ill with an immune glitch that was shutting my body down in 200 different directions, and I couldn't even hold a bar. So the pain was, I couldn't even live with it. And I contemplated a one-way walk in the bush with a broken compass, so to speak, to the point where I even asked a good friend to fetch my body in 3 days' time for closure for my family, at which point he in jest said, hey, I'll give you 5 days, Gare. Nice friend, good friend, you know. But I think the aspect I wanted to get to was what pulled me out of it was my connection, spirituality. Everything changed when I readjusted that. Can you comment on spirituality? I know this could go many, many miles on this, but is there a connection there for people to hear?
Gosh. Because if we have a connection with whatever face or name you give the divine, it could be nature, it could be the stars, it could be your particular religion or how you see that. But if you understand that there is something bigger going on, it can change you. I mean, you got Gary, to a very dire and understandable place given what you were experiencing in your life. But something there, whether we want to call it the gods, tapped you on the shoulder, or something opened up. You remind me of the story of Buckminster Fuller, who created the geodesic dome and was such a futurist. And he was at a very low point in his life, and he was at, I believe, Lake Michigan in Chicago. And he was ready to take his life. He walked in, the water gets higher and higher and higher, and it's up to his neck. And at that moment, he has, for lack of a better term, an epiphany. And he knew that he needed to turn his life around and how he needed to do it and what he needed to do. And he walked out of that water and changed his life. And for you, you had a moment where you came to a choice point, and I think your soul took over. Because I think many suicides actually are caused by what I call soul loss. We are living robotic lives. We aren't feeding ourselves with the stuff that makes us feel good. And I'm not talking about a burger and fries. I'm talking about beauty and awe and connection and the things that we go, oh my gosh, how you look at a sunrise or a sunset, or you look out and you see the green and it feeds you. You see the water and the connections, being creative. An Irish therapist told me the story of a gentleman during the time of the Troubles in Ireland, and he had killed his neighbor who was on the opposite side of those goings on at that time. And he told the press when they interviewed him, he said, at that time, I felt my soul leave my body. And he later took his own life. It's no surprise that we have in the U.S. 22 soldiers a day take their life, 22. 22 take their life every day for the horrors they live through. And horrors is a very big word. You live through your set and got there. They live through their set and got there. And there are times where it switches and change. I have a story in the book of a gentleman. He was bullied as a young boy, and he told his parents they were on vacation, and he said, oh, I'm just going to do whatever. And he intended to drown, and he was so angry that there was a lifeguard there that pulled him out. But he said, of course, now I'm very grateful, but at the time, that's what I wanted, right? And it's circumstance, but it's also, there's a woman in the book, it took, ready, 56 years, that's right, 56 years to get the right medication for. The right medication, 56 years. She's in her late 70s, early 80s at this point. And they got the right medication, and her life leveled off, and she healed with her children and everything else. There's so many ways. Suicide is universal and is pervasive, and it does need to come out of the closet. There's a lot of pain.
Right. And the aspect of selfishness, and I put it in those parentheses, how your whole world draws around yourself. In my case, I was concerned about myself and not about others or what I had to offer. Now that I have my new life, of course, I am moving onward. But in that darkest hour, where a lot of people are when they make this choice, right. I think the... You know, the suggestion to people, I suppose, is you have so much ahead of you, so much life. But if they can't see that in their darkness, how could you, and outside of the intervention, as you spoke, how could you possibly, bring that to somebody in that dark time? How can you, comment on that?
Well, I can. I mean, first of all, I want to say one thing. You know, when Robin Williams died, there were some reporters who said, how selfish of him. And that infuriated me, because he was in pain. You were in pain. I don't think selfish is the word. I really don't. But I do think your life and everything, your thinking becomes tight and contracted, and you think in binary terms, live or die, yes or no, on or off. And you don't realize there's more. So we insert the pause, we find the light, we give somebody something to hold on to, 15 minutes at a time, a day at a time, whatever we can do, that little bit that gives somebody hope, you know, that little bit that says, you matter, you count, or I need you to help me with X. I'm not talking about rebuilding the world, I'm saying, you know, help me hang the curtain rod, you know, help me do whatever. There is feeling like there's a purpose, and it's treating and being able to be honest with each other. I'm sorry you're having a bad time. Also, part of our world wants everybody to be happy, 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 and doesn't understand that depression is a medical matter, right? I can look at it from a soul perspective too, don't get me wrong, because I do. But you've got haywire biochemicals. I hospitalized a woman this weekend, and she's in acute care because, you know, she was running around her house in the dark and flailing around trying to hurt herself. And I said to all of her family, I said, she's not safe. I want her to be safe. I want her to be able to sleep, because people who can't sleep get into very dangerous places. And I want her to be able to sleep, and then let's make sense of everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer your question, or did I go all over the place?
Right. Now, we have issues, hormone issues. We have medications mm-hmm. today bringing dopamine down with the brain injured. That was certainly an issue. Cholesterol medications can lower people's cholesterol to the point where depression sets in so deep and dark. All of these are changeable factors. You know, hopefully somebody out there will hear that I always like to say tomorrow may not be the same as today. And, you know, just to give them that peek over the horizon, I suppose. But I did feel robbed when one friend in particular took his life and didn't show up to do what we were going to do. And I almost felt, you know, he didn't the reason I use that word selfish is I felt he didn't trust me enough to call me or whatever. But
I want to speak to that, Gary, because that's so common. That is so common. People like, because that's where the anger sits in, and the people feel with family members and loved ones who survived a loss, they get angry. Well, geez, I cared about you, or I loved you, or why didn't you reach out? You'd know I'd be there. Right, but for them at that moment, at that time, it's their particular choice point where they are with their pain. And as you know, I think there are a lot of factors: hormones, neurochemistry, substances, whatever the dire circumstances are that get somebody there. Because at that moment, it seems like and you have been close. You know this. It seems like the only answer to their pain.
Okay, Dr. McDowell, I'm just getting the flag here. We ran out of time. Is there a place we can contact you? People can get a hold of you. More information.
Yes. MakingPeaceWithSuicide.com. Or AdeleRyanMcDowell.com.
And I thank you so much, Dr. McDowell. I really appreciate your work that you're doing. And thanks, everyone, for listening this week. I'm Gary Kibsey. Dave Fuller will be back next week, so be sure to tune in then.